Hello, this is the podcast for our class on November the 8th, and it was class number 21. And in this class, we talked about defenses, and I mean by that, I mean affirmative defenses, as opposed to the defendant just saying, oh, I didn't do it, I didn't breach it, I didn't have a duty. These are affirmative defenses. I was negligent, but so was the plaintiff for this one. And because of that, the plaintiff's conduct is now the focus of the defense. Instead of, it's not, you know, a regular defense, I didn't do it, I didn't breach, I didn't have a duty, all of the things that are part of the cause of action for negligence. Here now we're saying defendant is now saying, yes, I'm for the classic affirmative defenses, I was negligent, but so was the plaintiff. And under the traditional laws of contributory negligence, that would have been a complete bar, no matter how egregious the defendant's actions were. Even the most minor actions on the part of the plaintiff that could have been shown to be negligent were going to be a complete bar to the action under contributory negligence. So, you know, if the you use the example of the very, very bad driving while texting and drunk and too fast, and hits the plaintiff who's jaywalking, the plaintiff's negligence would cancel out the negligent behavior of the defendant. This was considered to be harsh. Too many deserving plaintiffs were losing out to too many very negligent defendants. So in a very sweeping movement in the early 70s, the notion of comparative negligence completely upended our tort system, and no longer would the negligence of the plaintiff be a complete bar to the action. Comparative negligence just means now that the plaintiff's negligence is compared to the negligence of the defendant. But plaintiff, depending on our system, plaintiff is not necessarily going to be barred from an action, even if their negligence is considerable. Under comparative negligence, then, it was generally adopted by statute. And remember some of those earlier cases that we read where the court said, if you want to make such huge changes like Hammond v. Jenner, it's best to be done by statute. Comparative negligence was such a huge change that it was best done by statute, and most generally done by statute. And under the statute, there can be two types of comparative negligence. Pure, meaning no matter how negligent the plaintiff is, they will always be able to be compared against the defendant's negligence. And modified comparative negligence statute, that is, the plaintiff is not going to be always going to be able to recover. New York statute, pure, read it carefully. It just said, it's got just that one party's negligence is compared against the others. That's all it says. Under a modified statute, that can be two types. One will say the plaintiff's negligence can't be greater than the defendant's negligence, so anything up to 50% is fine. And the other type of modified, alternative modified, says that the plaintiff's negligence must be less than. So 49, up to 49%, it'll work too. So again, you've got to be able to realize what the statute of your jurisdiction is. New York's got one type of modified comparative negligence statute. New Jersey has another. Connecticut has another. All different jurisdictions have their own rules. But pretty much all jurisdictions except for one or two, and I don't even know which one of those one or two are anymore, one or two have adopted comparative negligence. It's just now the rule. So when you're looking over this, and we went, you know, I'm not going to go and repeat all of the different slides that we went through, but know how to, you should be able, if you had a problem, know how to figure out that problem. Read a statute, read a sample, you know, the problem itself, you know, a negligent plaintiff and one or more negligent defendants, and be able to do the allocation of individuals' losses depending upon how what the statutory language is, depending on their amount, whether there's going to be recovery at all, if it's modified, and if the plaintiff is more negligent, whether they do combination or aggregation, like the New Jersey statute, how to deal with the insolvent. Depends on whether it's going to be joint and several or several only. Again, if it's several only, the defendants will only ever be responsible for their own amount. If it's joint and several, depends on whether you reallocate the insolvent share to only the defendants or whether you include the plaintiff in there too, meaning the plaintiff will get less recovery. You're not reallocating the negligence, you're just reallocating the amount of money to be recovered. So the idea of comparative negligence as an affirmative defense is a crucial one, and you should understand this. Too many people all along the semester were talking about the negligence of the plaintiff as if it would be a bar to the action. I hope you realize now that it is not. The negligent behavior of the plaintiff is only negligence to be compared. It may be a bar depending upon the statute. And if I want you to be discussing that, I'll give you that. But I don't want to see, the problem here is, the real problem here is the behavior of the plaintiff. It is not going to be a bar to the action necessarily. Maybe if it's so much larger than the defendants, but if it is that, if that's going to be a consideration, I'll give you a statute and I'll make it pretty clear. Then we talked about what you can compare against medical malpractice. We had the Fritz v. McKinney case. Is the drunken driving, the negligent behavior of the plaintiff, to be used as a comparison against the medical malpractice, the negligent surgery of the defendant? And the court says, no, it has to be related to the malpractice. You can have, it has to be related somehow to the medical procedure. So perhaps if the plaintiff was negligent in informing the defendant of, you know, certain symptoms or not following the medical advice properly, perhaps that might have some bearing. I'm not all that positive about the occasions, but they might be. That might have some bearing, but just because the negligence of the plaintiff puts you there on the operating table cannot be anything that is compared to the negligence of the surgeon who couldn't find the artery. And the idea of entering into then evidence of the plaintiff's substance abuse, a court says it's certainly not to be compared with the medical malpractice, and it shouldn't even be brought in as evidence. Just too prejudicial. Bifurcate the trial, have a separate Don't bring it in. Don't talk about it until the damages phase. It may have some relevance if there's such a substance abuser that they were going to have a limited lifespan. That comes in at damages, not at liability. So bring it in at the damages phase. Don't tell the jury about it at all. So next class, we're going to pick up on the notion of affirmative defense, questioning with implied and express assumption of risk, question whether this is an affirmative defense at all. That is, affirmative defense just means, oh yeah, I was negligent, but so were you. That's a true one. Here, the defense is something that the plaintiff has done, some conduct of the plaintiff or some express, conduct could be writing a release or writing something that the plaintiff has done has released the defendant from any duty, has made the defendant free of any responsibility or duty of care. So the notion of assumption of risk then can go to the existence of a duty on the part of the defendant. So I want you to read these cases looking at the question of duty, a relief from their duty of reasonable care.